Hello, Zimbabwe. Welcome to Live Talk, The Connection, a platform where we discuss issues affecting young people. We are coming to you live from Studio 7 at the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your host, Chaboka Ncube. Today on Live Talk, we are discussing the International Human Rights Day, which is commemorated annually on the 10th of December. This year's commemoration is a call to acknowledge the importance and relevance of human rights in our everyday lives. But first, President-elect Donald Trump has chosen New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik to be his United Nations ambassador. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Pesher looks at the representative's rising career and what lies ahead.
I rise today to nominate the gentleman.
Elise Stefanik entered Congress in 2014 at age 30 as a moderate Republican representing a large, mostly rural district in northern New York State.
She initially was not particularly a President Trump supporter, became one. Moved up the ranks of party leadership in Congress, so that she is now, until she resigns, the chair of the Republican Conference.
As conference chair since 2021, she is the fourth-ranking House Republican.
She did not attend the Republican convention in Cleveland in 2016. And it was really only after his election and his sort of ascendancy, especially among conservatives, that she went, as she has put it, ultra MAGA.
For Stefanik, that meant defending Trump during his impeachments, his claims that the 2020 election was stolen, and being a strong campaign surrogate.
She is smart. She is a very hard worker. She is rhetorically extremely effective.
Stefanik rose to prominence during congressional hearings in which she challenged the handling of pro-Palestinian protests on some university campuses. Three prominent university presidents stepped down following the hearings.
So the answer is yes, that calling for the genocide of Jews violates Harvard Code of Conduct, correct?
Again, it depends on the context.
It does not depend on the context. The answer is yes, and this is why you should resign. These are unacceptable answers across the board.
In May, she expressed staunch support for Israel in remarks before the Israeli Knesset and has received significant campaign contributions from pro-Israel lobbies and individuals. Trump announced Stefanik as one of his first cabinet picks just 5 days after the election. She will come to the United Nations with limited foreign policy experience as the world body deals with wars in Ukraine, Gaza, and Sudan, soaring global hunger, climate change, and a raft of other crises.
I think that it's probable that once she becomes ambassador, Elise Stefanik is going to be focused on the Middle East. She may have to focus on Ukraine, and it seems probable, given her past statements, that she is going to be very critical towards China.
In his first term, Trump cut hundreds of millions of dollars in U.S. funding to several U.N. agencies. This time, the organization is making contingency plans for much deeper cuts. In the meantime, Elise Stefanik will find herself on a new international stage. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Russian state media say Moscow has granted asylum to ousted Syrian ruler Bashar al-Assad, who reports say landed in Moscow after escaping from Damascus Sunday. The Kremlin was a key supporter of Assad in his government's brutal attempts to defeat rebels, and that memory may make it difficult for Moscow to regain its foothold in Syria, which until a few days ago appeared unshakable. Elizabeth Shenef narrates this report from Ricardo Maquina.
The flag of the Syrian opposition was raised at the Syrian embassy in Moscow on Monday, a sign that Russia has lost a key ally in the Middle East and must now rethink its strategy and alliances in the region. Kremlin granted asylum to the ousted Syrian leader and his family in Moscow and called for an emergency meeting of the United Nations Security Council to discuss the matter. For Moscow, Assad's downfall is a serious blow.
Moscow's intervention in Syria was a way of showing it was a global power and that it had an ability to influence things outside of its immediate neighborhood. So I think in terms of the kind of geopolitical implications, it shows that Russia is less powerful than it might want to project to the rest of the world.
Moscow entered the Syrian war to support Assad in 2015, investing resources in the lives of Russian soldiers, which could now come to nothing. Analysts say it is others who stand to reap the benefits of Assad's downfall after Syria's 13-year civil war.
The big winner here is Turkey. Erdogan is thrilled, I think, that Trump has suggested he's going to remove American service members from Syria. Turkey's influence becomes more critical in that country. So Erdogan and Turkey, their stock rises while Russia's stock decreases here.
Kremlin officials say they are in contact with the new authorities, suggesting Moscow wants to reach some agreement to maintain its presence in Syria. But the role Moscow had in Assad's repression of Syria's people may be a memory difficult to erase.
We saw Russia bombing hospitals, bombing schools, supporting Assad drop barrel bombs on the population, supporting Assad when he used chemical weapons. So I don't think any incoming government, whatever the composition is, whether it's HTS, whether it involves the Kurds, whatever, you know, whichever groups it includes, they cannot just suddenly forget the brutality that, you know, Russia inflicted upon the civilian population.
The rapid fall of the government was for many unimaginable a month ago, destroying a power structure that some people until recently thought was here to stay, and creating a new landscape that for now is unclear. For Ricardo Marquina, Elizabeth Cherna, VOA News.
The top U.S. diplomat to Zimbabwe, Ambassador Pamela Tremont, says the U.S. is happy and gratified by the progress the United States President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, PEPFAR, has made in reducing the number of HIV-related deaths in Zimbabwe.
It was great to see all the many components that go into the testing, treatment, and tracking of HIV-positive Zimbabweans so that we can put an end to this as a health threat by 2030, as is the goal for that. We've made huge progress since 2006. The number of deaths from HIV has fallen 80%, and that is something I think we should all be very proud of. The United States is extremely happy and gratified to support Zimbabwe in this fight through the provision of antiretroviral treatment and the provision of many health workers at a lot of health clinics and hospitals around Zimbabwe. So it was great to see all of that in action today and to see the dedication and the stubbornness of the healthcare workers who track down those HIV-positive patients who are scared and reluctant to undertake treatment that can save their lives and those of their families. So thank you to the healthcare workers. You really are heroes in all of this.
Yes, thank you.
We're so proud to be.
That was Ambassador Pamela Tremont speaking during her visit to Marondera Provincial Hospital to assess an HIV program supported by PEPFAR Fund. The U.S. supports HIV services for over 3,600 people living with HIV in Marondera. PEPFAR was launched on January 28, 2003 by former U.S. President George Bush. It is the largest commitment by any nation to address a single disease. When PEPFAR was launched, HIV/AIDS was devastating Zimbabwe, with 330 people dying every day. Zimbabwe has 1.3 million people living with HIV, and more than 1.2 million of these people are now on life-saving HIV treatment, and 97% of those on treatment have achieved viral suppression, meaning they can no longer transmit the virus to their partners. Reports say PEPFAR has spent more than $100 billion in Africa. In Bulawayo, USA public diplomacy officer Rebecca Achanepa says they are working on creating a network of women in business who can collaborate and grow together.
One of the disadvantages that many women business owners face is they don't have the same networks that some of their male counterparts do. But this program helps you overcome that. You have the opportunity to be the network that will help business in Zimbabwe thrive and grow and be even better. So many have completed the program, and they continue to support and help each other. More than just giving each other business, they share advice, they share opportunities, they look to collaborate. They also work to improve the policies that will make business better and more welcoming to women entrepreneurs. So you are part of this amazing sisterhood of women entrepreneurs in Zimbabwe. You're working together with them, cooperating with them, sharing advice, sharing ideas, will not reduce your bottom line. It will not threaten your profits. It will actually only increase them. Because the more people you know, the better your reputation among these women, it will build your business. So don't think of all the people sitting here as your competition. They are all your network. They are all the ladies who are helping you, going to help you succeed, and you will help them succeed, which in turn helps Bulawayo businesses succeed, which it grows Zimbabwe's whole economy.
That was the USA public diplomacy officer Rebecca Achanepa speaking at the Academy for Women Entrepreneurs graduation ceremony in Bulawayo. Over 30 women participated in the exchange program that empowers women with the knowledge, networks, and access they need to launch or scale successful business. This year alone, more than 100 women participated in the programs held in Mutare, Harare, and Bulawayo. With that, let's take a short break. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
For those that have just joined us, please note that we are streaming live on our Facebook pages, VOA Shona, VOA Studio 7, and VOA Ndebele. We are also live on YouTube, VOA Zimbabwe. As Zimbabwe joins the world in marking the International Human Rights Day, the government-appointed Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission says the country has made strides in the promotion and protection of human rights, calling on all stakeholders to work together in advancing human rights in the country. On the other hand, the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says it has noted with concern the arbitrary, inconsistent, and selective implementation of universal human rights standards and systematic inequalities that undermine access to justice and other rights. The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights highlighted the plight of human rights defenders who, it says, they continue to face intimidation, harassment, and criminalization. This year, the day is being commemorated under the theme, Our Rights, Our Future, Right Now. To discuss this issue, we are joined by ZANU-PF youth member and political activist, Mr. Snowball Tongogara, Mr. Kuda Pejana, an independent political analyst and a human rights lawyer, Mr. Pardon Tafumane. Welcome to Live Talk, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Mluwe. We'll start with you, Mr. Tongogara. As the world commemorates the International Human Rights Day, how is Zimbabwe faring on the protection and promotion of human rights?
Thank you very much. We are so happy as Zimbabweans because since the inception of the African Republic, we have seen that our democracy has matured, that we have seen that human rights are respected in our country. And we know that opposition activists, they always claim that Zimbabwean government is abusing opposition members. But there's no evidence at all that the ruling party and the government is harassing members of the opposition. Even opposition members can testify that under the leadership of President Edith Mnangagwa, things have changed, and the respect of rule of law, the respect of women. Right? So we are so happy with the current leadership of our president. And we do not mind these fake reports that saying the human rights abuses are not good because, you know, they are within the agenda. They want to effect redemption in Zimbabwe. They don't want to see Zimbabwe prosper. They don't want to see Zimbabwe united. So they create fake news. They create fake narratives. So we don't mind. But we know that our people are happy with DECA.
Thank you, Mr. Tongogara. Mr. Bejan, let's come to you. You've heard Mr. Tongogara speak there, and also you can assess the year 2024. How has things been in Zimbabwe? What's your take?
Mr. Mube, the government of Zimbabwe is completely isolated and divorced from the people that it should be leading. You know, in modern statecraft and modern government, the primary principle is that of the consent of the governed. A government cannot preside over a population who does not consent to its governance. So what we have in Zimbabwe right now is that we have a government that functions by force, that functions by violence, that functions by fear, because this government knows that it does not have the backing of the general people of Zimbabwe. So what they do is that they resort to punishing people. If you look at the record of the civil rights and the economic rights of Zimbabwe in 2024, it's a very sorry, regrettable record that we have. We have a continuation of forced disappearances. In other words, if you speak against the government, or if you give rather neutral feedback to the government, you can disappear in Zimbabwe. You can be killed in Zimbabwe, or you can be put in jail, and you'll be in pre-trial detention for a very long time, as has been the case with Job Sikala, a prominent opposition leader, and most recently, Jameson Kimba, a prominent opposition leader in Zimbabwe as well. So this is a very despicable record that we have here. Zimbabwe continues to rank itself among, you know, some of the most ruthless dictatorships in the world, and it boggles the mind where you have people like Mr. Tongogara coming here and trying to sanitize that very, very bad record that we are all witnessing.
Thank you, Mr. Bajan. Mr. Tafumane, coming to you as a lawyer, what's your assessment of the year 2024 when it comes to human rights in Zimbabwe? And also, you've heard the two gentlemen speak. How do you view the whole, the way ya varikuona nayo the issue of human rights in Zimbabwe?
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for having me. Issues in human rights in Zimbabwe, we've got to contextualize it and see where I would say my highlights of where we have very, very abusive statecraft against citizens. And that always happens before elections and also possibly during elections and after elections. We tend to live in an environment of a very securitized election environment, and that has been the culture. When we compare periods post first dispensation and second dispensation, you would find that in the first dispensation, there was a very suppressed human rights atmosphere in Zimbabwe. The second dispensation is, in a way, tried to be better. But when you look at periods, which I'm talking about here, before and during after elections, they seem to have clashed and suppressed human rights around that period. But when you compare the two periods, the second dispensation is at a much better place than the first dispensation. That doesn't mean that there is nothing the government can do to better the situation, because the theme today is our rights, our future right now. So we want to see a government that is going to now look at the civil society, how they can better protect human rights and addressing both present injustices and also reshaping unjust societies and also empowering marginalized groups. So we want to see an environment 2024 as we come to a close. We are not happy with the arbitrary arrest of persons, CCC members that we have seen being denied bail and so on and so forth. That doesn't give us a good image as a country. Going forward, we want to see the future of Zimbabwe reshaping, especially these unjust laws which are there that are very punitive, that are seek to suppress the rights of people. Those need to be repealed. Those need to be changed. Those need to be done away with, so that we have a very free atmosphere where people can demonstrate, where people can show their desires and rights to congregate and to speak against government without fear and without favor.
Thank you so much, Mr. Tafumane. Tozoka kwamuri vatongogara manzwa vamwe vachitaura nezvenyaya iyi. Asi muchipindurawo ipapo, toda kubvunza zvekare kuti tikuona Commission yeZimbabwe Human Rights Commission iriyo ine basa guru rekuti inge ichidzivirira kodzero dzeveruzhinji. Muri kuona ichishandawo sei kana tichitarisa mashandiro ayo muZimbabwe muchidimbo?
Thank you very much. I think we have asked me to respond to two questions. I have to respond to what my colleagues are saying, and then I have to respond about Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission. First of all, I want to say Zimbabwe is a democratic state. We respect human rights. If you go, even if you look at the list of countries where there is violence in Africa, you find that Zimbabwe does not appear on that list. We are very peaceful country. So we don't know where these accusations are coming from. And you know what? Even in Syria, we know that terrorists start taking over the power. And now the United Kingdom is considering to resume whether those terrorists be considered as a terrorist or they can be changed to be a legitimate government. You see that that's the standard of the West. They talk about human rights when it suits their interests, and they talk about the violation of human rights when their interests are being violated.
Mm-hmm.
So in the context of Zimbabwe, hello?
Yes, you can continue, Muchidimbu, wrapping it up.
Okay, so we know that Zimbabwe is a very beautiful country, and we don't know where these accusations are coming from, as I said earlier. And yes, we know that Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission is doing their work very well, fantastic. Human rights are being protected and defended at all levels in our country. We have no issues with Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission. If you see that your human rights are being violated, you need to approach the offices or the courts. We are not seeing people going to court. And some people are talking about protest. Do you not even in Ukraine, they're coming up with laws that ban protest. No country can prosper if people are just protesting.
Thank you, Mr. Tongokarava Pichana Muchidimbu. Vechidiki vanogona kupinda sei munyaya dzekudzivirirwa kwekodzero dzeveruzhinji muZimbabwe, uyezve zviripo here zviri kuvamisa kuti vange vachiita izvi in just a minute, Vapechana.
Well, I must say that, young people like myself, we should continue calling for an independent judiciary in Zimbabwe. We must continue demanding free trials in Zimbabwe, because what has been happening in Zimbabwe, especially targeting opposition members and independent thinkers, critical thinkers, you know, has been that... they get arrested and then they are put in pre-trial detention for a very long period, which is rather unconstitutional. The Constitution of Zimbabwe says that anybody who is arrested should get a fair trial within 48 hours. We should also demand press freedom. Right now, the government of Zimbabwe has a monopoly on information systems. It's refusing to democratize the media space. And just feeding the people of Zimbabwe with propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, I must close by saying that economic rights are human rights as well. So the unemployment rate in Zimbabwe is nearing 90%. We are experiencing hyperinflation. The new currency that has been introduced by the government is collapsing.
Thank you.
This is increasing poverty levels, Mr. Ngube. So I'm saying economic rights and civil rights, both these two, they constitute human rights as well, and we must continue demanding this.
Thank you so much, Mr. Bejana. Sivuya guwe vava tafunmane sesikriba gawishelo. Nga mafichane singati imiteto ekona elizweni yenele na uguti ivigele ilungele loluntu eZimbabwe.
Imithetho ikhona, siyayibona. Yonke imithetho siyayibona, kule mithetho engani iyavikela ilungelo labantu. Siyayibona imithetho enjalo. Sabe sifisa ukuthi uhulumende sihlalisane laye phansi, sibonisana. Uhulumende engafaki imithetho okuthi ungani uyethuka ukuthi abantu bangaba empowered, ebesebengazani bazavukela uhulumende uzame. Hayi, abantu need and deserve ilungelo labo so that they can exercise it freely and not be coerced. Okade ukukhuluma ngubaba uBejani laphana, sabe sifisa ukuthi kube le review yemithetho ekhona eminingi imithetho eZimbabwe esibona ngani iyancindezela uZulu, even access. Siyayibona imithetho le evimbezela abantu ukuthi bengazuzi imali ezivela phandle kwelizwe ezama-donors lezana. So ngazani sokukhangelwana ukuthi abaphiwe izimali zivela ngaphi, baphiwe izimali zinezo ukuthi bengafuna ukuvusana nohulumente.
Yes,
we want to see some of those laws change. So it's a work in progress, and we hope uhulumende la uyazwa, uyazwisisa. I-Human Rights Commission
siyabonga baba
lawana.
Siyabonga baba tafumane
ikhulume kakhulu be advocate on behalf of ama citizens.
Siyabonga baba tafumane, unfortunately isikhathi sesibalekileyo. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanking you all for joining us. Signing off in Washington, I am Thabo Kancube.